We're going to sing through the report today.
Oh, yeah. Quick review says good things.
Jim's going to join us. All right. Well, I think our real business today is to get an update on what's going on out there from Rick and Bev, and then probably look at that cash position and see if we need to make any decisions on that. Mm-hmm. But I vote to just start with the Rick and Bev show as to what's going on out there and
okay.
And give us an update.
Okay, how much time do we have?
I'd say 40 minutes.
Okay.
I think you're okay there?
Sure.
Okay.
You have anything to begin with, Beverly?
Not really, no.
Okay.
Question that you might have.
Okay, well, let me give you a quick.
Yeah.
Did you meet everybody?
I met these two.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm Mark.
Tim Johnson.
I'm actually sitting in for Councilor Allen.
Mike.
I'm a city councilor as of January.
Okay.
Mark Salem.
Wonderful. And we're going to record it. I think have we already started.
Already started.
Everybody has a report.
Yep.
Okay. Here's some. Here's one extra for you.
Thank you.
Rebecca, you get dinner. You know Mark?
Oh. Okay.
Good. Good.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
20 years.
Perfect. Well, that just qualifies.
His son's name is Tim, and he's graduating this year.
Go ahead. A quick update on the merger. The bank merger went through on April 1st. You can see there's different signage up. I think the system conversion for the bank is scheduled for Labor Day weekend. I'm not recommending that you get $300 cash out of the ATM. I'm sure it'll be smooth.
Hit the ATM early. Before that, yeah.
They've
gone through a number of conversions, so they're really trying to make sure that it goes smooth, but we all know.
They've done it a bunch of times before, so it'll go well. And as I mentioned to you, their trust department is merging into our trust company, so we'll have a system conversion on the weekend of August 3rd and 4th, but it won't impact any of our customers. We'll just be merging their conversion onto our system. So, and then at some point later in the year, our logo will go away and we'll merge into the bank. So that's kind of the process.
So what will the trust company be called then?
It'll be called CB Trust and Investments. There's the old Columbia Funds company, mm-hmm. Had a trust company called Columbia Trust, and okay. That's now owned by Standard Insurance, so we won't be Columbia Trust. Mm-hmm. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Rick.
Sorry.
Yeah.
We'll just get extra coffee.
Just getting started, so you're good.
Sorry, only that one.
Let's scoot down here.
So I think when we last met, I told you that I thought it might be a pretty good year, and we ended up having the best quarter. Because I always understate everything. We ended up having the best quarter in about 15 years.
Woof-da.
Yeah. So there are. You never want to quibble about the market going up. I question some of the reasons why it's going up. Earnings in the first quarter were okay. In the second quarter, not so much. Companies are generally hitting their estimates, but they're missing on revenue. A greater portion of them are missing on revenue than we would like to see, and the outlook has been soft. So. You have a sort of a consistent picture everywhere you look of the economy beginning to hit a little bit of a soft patch. We've seen manufacturing numbers come down. The Institute of Supply Managers Index is one that we look at very frequently, and anything over 50 indicates expansion, and anything under 50 indicates a contraction. And that has been in the high 50s, and the most recent number was less than 51, so it's just right on the fence between contraction and expansion. And the service index is a little better, but not as good as you would hope. So that's I think, a reason for not really a negative outlook, but a more reserved outlook than one might expect just looking at the broad indexes. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, employment is slowly recovering, and that's sort of the counter trend to manufacturing, if you look at just the raw numbers. However, when you begin to take those employment numbers apart, the work week was a little shorter last month, and the number of part-time jobs went up. So people have jobs, but they're not quality jobs. Again, you know, anytime somebody gets a paycheck these days, that's a good thing, but we would rather see high-quality employment. I think there are two principal reasons why the market went up in the quarter, and neither of them have anything to do with earnings and the accumulation of wealth on balance sheets. One is that Europe and Asia are still very soft. Asia, the expectations for Asia are declining slightly, and Europe is still in recession. So given that, money is coming to the U.S. in a kind of a flight to quality. And the other thing that is going on in the market is that with interest rates being at zero for so very long, fixed income investors have given up on bonds, and beginning about November, money started moving out of bond funds and into stock funds, and that's a reversal of a trend that's about 5 years old. With all the volatility that we had in the market, people were just pouring money into bonds and getting anywhere from 5 to 10% on bonds. The bond market is now, by most accounts, played out. It's at the very top. And there's nothing further to be gained from owning bonds, and so people have been buying stocks. And when you have more buyers than sellers, prices go up. Mm-hmm. That is another cause for concern, because that is primarily retail money, and the retail investor is always the last guy in. So while the market is up, and we're exposed to it, and we're enjoying it, this run in the market is 4 years old now, and they typically last about 4 years. We've gone through a historical high, and it's sometimes difficult for markets to break through those historical highs. And we have what are going to be some headwinds, and we have continued softness in employment. While no one can say for sure that the market is going to correct this week or next week or the week after, we're in a situation now where we have a growing probability of a correction in the market. Now, what would that be? I think it'll probably be a 10%, 15% correction, because there's nothing systemic that would warrant us having a big 20 or 30% drop in the market. It's just something that comes along, that it's really something that we have to have in a healthy market. You need to have the market take a breather every now and then. And so I think that's probably what we'll see at some point over the next year. A correction of some sort where the market drops down in the 1500 range. Maybe as low as 1450, something like that. Now, having said that, in 2005, we were sitting on exactly the same situation for about 2 years before it finally did something. So it just because everything suggests that you might have a dip in the market doesn't mean that you're going to have one. It's going to go up until it doesn't. So
it sounds like gravity.
Yeah, we can all agree to that one. Yeah.
So I think what we have to do is just enjoy it. One of the big positives on the chart at the very beginning here is the Case-Shiller 20 City Home Price Index. We've got consistent improvement in home prices, and I think it's not only statistically, but you can just hear anecdotally around in Portland, you have people, there's competitive bidding on houses. We have an estate with a house in Glen Eden Beach, and we sold it the day we listed it last week.
Wow.
You know, which is quite a bit different from...
Must have been correctly priced.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's... It has to be correctly priced.
But a really good price.
It's not like 2006 where you can just...
Put it down to nothing and nobody would give an offer.
It's... But yeah, we sold that house the day we listed it, and we have seen more and more experiences like that, where if you have the property reasonably priced, you're going to sell it.
Yeah, I went to a meeting with a bunch of the loan officers from the combined Columbia Bank up in Troutdale last week, and a number of them were talking about either they've sold a home or bought a home recently in the last couple months, and all of them were talking about that it was over listed price, whether they were buying or selling. And that was in the Bend area, that was in the Portland, Vancouver area, that was, so we are seeing those things.
And the important thing to note from that comment is that we don't have meetings in Scottsdale.
Right.
We weren't.
Troutdale.
Really? Troutdale?
Well, we're all across Oregon now, so we had to find a center point.
We're not wasting the shareholders' money.
No.
So the big thing about this home price index is that the home building industry and the automobile industry have the two greatest inputs into the economy, and they're both so much better off now than they were a few years ago that that's going to really help the economy push along. You know, we still feel very good, although we will not be surprised when we see the market begin to take a little turn. I thought that a couple of weeks ago was going to be the turn, because we sold down about 30 points on the S&P, and then it just popped right back, and off we go again. So we'll see.
Kind of seems like though investors are using that those quick downs as buying opportunities. Switching from the bonds to the...
Yeah. There's a lot of that going on. And this is one of those markets where you absolutely can't do that. You will end up losing money if you try to do that. You've got to have exposure all the time, or you're going to miss 90% of it. And as evidence of that, the hedge fund managers, who were supposed to be the smart guys... where the S&P was up 10% in the quarter, on the average they're up 2%. And that's what happens when you try to
time it,
outsmart it. Mm-hmm. And one of them in particular, John Paulson, was down 27% in the month of April, and he's down 47% for the year.
Wow.
So,
and we have no investments with him, correct?
Okay,
I just want to clarify.
He's widely acknowledged to be the smartest guy on Wall Street. So this is not a market where being smart helps you. So with that background, let's look at the defined contribution plan. There behind the first tab. So as we go along with this, the black bars on the graph here represent the quarterly performance for the portfolio, and the gray bars represent the monthly performance of the benchmark, and the black line represents the cumulative results. And we have been underweight the benchmark for the years 2010 and 2011 and in 2012, and so we're trailing that benchmark a little bit, but we did it for reasons that it's not because the funds were performing bad, it was because we were underweight because of our forecast. So we were behind the benchmark, but the fund managers themselves did pretty well. During the quarter,
and when you say due to forecast, you're talking about knowing that there's a correction coming and wanting to be.
Yeah, we just didn't, with the European situation as volatile as it was, we were concerned about the downside.
Yeah.
Conservative is okay.
Yeah,
that's
right.
What we have directed you to do. Be careful with our money.
So for the quarter, the plan was up $237,310. Which translated to 6.28%, and the benchmark did 6.24, so we were just slightly ahead of the benchmark. And year to date, your fiscal year is June 30th, I think.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Fiscal year to date, it's up 10.35%, and we're trailing about 0.4% behind.
You see
that.
Where those are?
Yeah.
Right down at the bottom, there is those percentages.
Oh, right there.
Quarterly return, and that's fiscal year to date.
Yeah.
So let's kind of take this apart and see what's contributing to the return and what's not. We've said here for the last couple of years that we have a pretty dim view of treasuries, we've been. Underweight treasuries and overweight corporates relative to the benchmark, and that continues to be a good approach toward bonds for us. During the quarter, bonds sold off because money was going into stocks, and so the benchmark return for bonds was actually negative in the quarter. It was minus 0.12%. Most of that negative performance came from treasuries, and being underweight, we outperformed the benchmark there. So we did about 0.5% for the quarter. And fiscal year to date, we've done 370 in the bonds, and the benchmark's done 168. So that's added to performance there. I think you still have to own bonds. But we are coming to a place, there's a lot of uncertainty about the stock market. There is certainty about the bond market. The bond market is going to sell off. It will happen. Now, again, I don't know when, but there are two schools of thought on it. We have some of our money with Federated. Investors, they have the intermediate return bond fund, and I met with their global fixed income strategist Tuesday to talk about bonds in general, because I think that's the big issue right now. And you can basically divide the bond world into two camps. One believes that there's a risk that we're going to be like Japan, and we're going to have a 10 or 15 year period of zero growth and zero interest rates. And in that environment, the correct approach is to buy long maturity government bonds and just collect your 1% for the next 10 years. Now, the risk of being wrong is pretty profound, because if you own a 10 year government bond right now, you're collecting about a 1.7% yield on it. And if rates go up less than 1%, you're going to lose all your yield for the rest of the life of the bond. On the other hand, there are people who believe...
If you sell it before the 10 years...
If you sell it before 10 years is up. You effectively, you sell it every day, because you mark to market every day. So every morning you have sold that bond and you start over again.
Okay.
The other school of thought is that there are so many things that have to go perfectly for the Fed to engineer a soft landing after all of the money that it's printed and all of the bond purchases that it's done. There are too many things that have to go right to avoid interest rates going up. And that's what we want to, it's one thing to say interest rates are too low, I wish I had income. In many ways, a much more painful outcome will be if rates do go up, because the value of your bond investments will go down. And so I had breakfast with this guy, and he's really, really smart. He's traveled all over the world. He studies global macroeconomics, and he's their bond strategist. And he began listing, he believes that rates are going to stay low for a long time. And he started talking about all the things that had to go right, and all the smart people that have engineered all the models. And I sat there and I said, do you remember seeing Jurassic Park? And he looked at me and I said, you know, it's like, 1 minute you've got all these models and spreadsheets and walls and electric fences and all that, and the next minute you're getting eaten by a dinosaur. And so I'm of a more cautious, what we've got seriously is a situation where we've got a lot of smart people who are trying to engineer a way out of all of the bond purchases, and there is not a historical model to follow. It's never been done before. And so they're very smart and they're doing their best, but they're flying blind. So we believe in that environment that it makes sense not to be reaching for yield in bonds, not to be doing it through maturities. We're shorter than the market. And we also believe that we have to have impeccable credit, because if there's credit risk in the portfolio, that'll be the first thing that sells off when rates start to go up. So that is a story that's going to be playing out over the next 3 to 5 quarters, and it's really a bigger story than the stock market. So we'll be watching that very closely. Going down on large cap growth for the quarter, we did 10.25, and the S&P did 1061. That happened in the month of March, and a lot of that trailing performance there has to do with Apple, because Apple is in that growth index, and when Apple began to really sell off pretty severely, it took the growth side of the market with it. And then the large, and he did 17.16 for the year. In large value, we did very well in value. There was all money was moving into the market, and it was tending to move toward higher quality stocks on the value side. In particular, the telecoms and healthcare and those sectors. So we did 11.06 there, and for the fiscal year, the manager did 20.5%. Mid-cap goes back to the economic story. The mid-cap sector is populated in a very big way with home builders and banks. And so you can see some of the bounce in home building and banking there. The mid-cap manager for the quarter did 16%, and he's up 25% fiscal year to date. We really like that mid-cap manager that we've got. That fund has been closed for a number of years, and it opened briefly, and we took the opportunity to go in and take a position in it. Energy did well. We were up 11.52 for the quarter, and it's up 21% year to date. It's going to have a bad April. Gas prices came down in late March, and which caused margin compression for the downstream energy producers, the gas stations and whatnot. So Chevron and Exxon and all of those had a bad April. That's going to come back. We're getting back to the traveling season prices.
15 cents a gallon in 1 week.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that'll come back.
Well, that energy sector is one we've been hurt on the last couple of years, but it's coming back.
When the economy got very soft, demand for energy went down. But yeah, we believe that the long term case for energy is impeccable. If the economy recovers, it's going to require energy.
Yep.
And then on the international holding, we did 754 against 513. And year to date, we trailed slightly. If you recall, we changed managers earlier in the year, and so the manager that we had terminated was trailing a little bit there, and that picked up some of that performance. So there we have 628 for the quarter and 1035 for the fiscal year. So I'm going to move to the next tab for
Quick question.
Sure.
The inflation number that you have in there for the last 3 months, that can't be accurate. Just for a 3 month period.
It is. Yeah.
So is inflation starting?
It's the CPI number.
1.46. Is that the one you're talking about, Mike?
No. Well, that's a trailing 1 year number.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. It's a trailing 1 year number.
Okay.
Yeah. But we're pushing 2%, and that with another thing that is a little troubling is that inflation is starting to creep back in a little bit, and employment is starting to creep back up, which means that the Fed is going to be a little less reluctant over time to continue pouring $80 billion a month into the economy. And that's a lot of money, $80 billion a month in cash that they're literally printing and buying treasuries and mortgages with it. They're not getting the money out of the vault. They're creating the money. And that sooner or later must catch up with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's consistent with Ben Bernanke's philosophy. He made a speech about 10 years ago before he became the chairman, in which he said that the Federal Reserve ought to be willing to throw money out of helicopters if that's what it took to stimulate the economy. So his nickname is Helicopter Ben.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. He's rewriting macroeconomics.
He is.
So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Well, and he's not going to stand for reappointment. And his term ends this December. And that's another thing, as I was having this conversation this week, it's another thing that has to go right. The conventional wisdom is that Janet Yellen will succeed him, and she thinks exactly like him on every issue. But there's a possibility that she might not be confirmed in the Senate, because there's growing opposition to Bernanke in the Senate. And so if you get somebody who's more hawkish on Fed policy instead of Janet Yellen, then the $80 billion a month starts to become questionable, and then people begin reassessing where they are in the market. So I'm going to turn here to page 9 of 17. That's another one that has the chart. And the gain in dollars for the entire portfolio was $250,000 for the quarter, and fiscal year to date we're up $400,000.
And report period would be from the beginning, correct?
That's from inception. That's the annualized return since inception. And you had the impeccable timing of opening the account the month before the market crashed.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, we all recall that.
So yeah.
Could not have done it better if we tried.
Write this up in the textbook.
You know, you do what you do.
With a long, whole lot of people.
Yeah.
You do what you do. So just from a high level, the funds are the same. The allocations are different. The return on the entire fund itself, and now I'm flipping over to 10, is 631 for the quarter, and 1039 all in for the fiscal year to date. And I'm going to turn over.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
When people retire or move on, and the city being paid for, now I know you set aside money every year in anticipating that, but does it ever get into the numbers here that you're talking about? How does that
This is net work? Of of contributions and withdrawals. This is strictly investment gains.
Okay.
So I'm going to go through the three component accounts. The first is the money market, and nothing. Well, I'm going to the next page. I'm going to break it down.
And next tab?
Yeah, next tab.
Okay.
This shows the money market. Interest rates are at zero, of course. We've got $260,000 in there, Beverly, is that right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, we need $6.
And, yeah.
63 fiscal
Ooh.
Year.
Fiscal lunch.
Well, that's courtesy of the Fed.
And also they threw a month about out of a helicopter, though.
That, you couldn't gas up the helicopter.
But when those coins hit you, they hurt.
So that's the money market account. The real engine of the portfolio, of course, is the capital growth account, and that's behind the next step. It was up $249,000 for the quarter and is up $382,000 year to date. And we have a different allocation here. The defined contribution plan is 60% equity and 40% fixed income. This portfolio is 80% equity, 20% fixed income, because we've got the liquidity account that we use as a buffer for the market. So this portfolio has a much longer time horizon in the strategy that we adopted, and it can afford to be more aggressive. So for the quarter, it did 8.43%, and year-to-date, it did 13.54%.
So when I look at that quarterly number, though, mm-hmm. since that inflation number is trailing 12 month, that's not really an accurate snapshot of the quarter.
I think I need to correct myself, because I think it is quarterly. And it's...
That would imply an annualized rate of 6%.
It spiked in the quarter. And you can get closer to the annualized rate by looking at the fiscal year to date, and that's about 2.5. And that's the government's number on that.
But you feel an annual rate in 2013 between 2 and 2.5.
Mm-hmm. Because and which is getting closer to their target. The problem with that 2 to 2.5 is that you pair that off against GDP that's going to be around 2, and we have no real growth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yet the market is up. And the reason the market is up is that we're putting $80 billion a month out there, and that money is buying stocks.
Kool-Aid.
It's not buying Hondas. It's buying some Hondas. So, a good year shaping up. We've got another quarter to go, but it's looking like a pretty good year. Whether we're entering another 10 to 15 year period where the market goes up consistently every year, I don't think so. I think the long-term average for the next 5 years for sure is single digits. So this is a good year. And we'll just keep plugging away. And then finally, we have the benchmark account or the liquidity account, and it.
Rick, on here, why? Mm-hmm. I see these, the black and the gray, mm-hmm. The actual versus the index, getting wider and wider here, and but it's not reflective in these numbers. Benchmark 1395
versus
1354, but this shows index over 20.
We're closing that gap back. If you come back and look on page 5, if you recall, in the third quarter of 2011, we got really dinged when the Greek crisis came in 2011. We had about 4 positions where the market went against us, and that caused us to lose ground against the benchmark. But we've regain that, and that'll gradually close.
But I'm not seeing that same, these numbers don't say that the benchmarks are averaging over 20%, almost 25% in subclass performance.
That's cumulative.
Okay. Cumulative through?
That's cumulative since inception.
Okay.
And these numbers are annualized.
Well, but I mean, this says the benchmark was 4% cumulative. This says it was 25%. I'm not seeing.
That's one's annualized and the other is cumulative.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And virtually all of that is 2011.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I can't make 2011 go away.
Or 2009.
2009 was not that bad.
I was looking at this chart.
Oh. Well, actually, if you go back and the first quarter of 2009 was wretched, and that's this one right here.
Mm-hmm.
But the last three quarters were terrific, and we fully participated in that. And one good thing that you see here is in that 2009 we were down, but we were down less than the market, which is what we always try to do. And then just to carry out what Tim was asking about, this is the third quarter of 2011, and that's the quarter where we missed, and everything that we had went the wrong way. So.
Thanks, Rick.
Okay. Now, the benchmark account, of course, is there to be sure that we have adequate liquidity regardless of what the market cycle is. And we're collecting a reasonable amount of interest there. Given the interest rate environment, I had talked about perhaps going to an investment grade product that would get us another percent there, but I'm not as excited about that as I was. I think we just need to accept in exchange for less risk in the fixed income portfolio, just go ahead and take what it gives us.
Isn't that value a little higher than we normally try to keep it?
We've had, I think, 5 years in there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? And we're running about $150,000 a year. So we're up a little bit.
Yeah. And possible retirees in the next year.
Yeah.
We have some big retirees in the next year.
So, and that, I think that's one of the questions is... if there's not going to be a large retirement, I'd prefer putting it into the capital growth portfolio. But if you know that's coming, you need to go ahead and do it.
We have, you want me to?
Well, let's finish up with Rick and then let's turn to that.
That's all I've got, actually.
Oh, okay.
I think, and then the final tab there is just a current position as of... Oh, this is it's a little bit stale. She put
these
together.
Yes, she was.
Okay. We have a new person assembling these, and she wanted to be proactive in putting the reports together.
The point that was made, she went right through that.
Yeah.
You've been good.
So those are my comments. It's a good year. I think it'll continue to be a good year, but I won't be surprised to see... a modest correction in the market at some point. I would prefer that we have it sooner rather than later, because if we have it later, it'll be more profound. And then I'm beginning to get extremely cautious about bonds. There's a big dispute on my team about bonds. There's a school of thought that believes that we might be, the fellow that works with me, who you've met, Chris Magana, says, prove to me why we're not Japan. And, you know, on paper, we might be Japan. You can make a case. But there was a French philosopher named Pascal who was asked to prove the existence of God. And he said that, you know, I can't really prove it, but you better believe it because the risk of being wrong is rather undesirable. So, and I think that's kind of my approach on bonds is we might be Japan, but the risk of being wrong on that is pretty serious. So that's our view.
So what are you doing differently in the coming quarters based on all of this?
Well, we've already made the adjustments that we'll make for now, and that is that we got out of the high yield space. And the managers that we have in the portfolio are doing two things. They're shortening duration, well, three things. They're shortening duration, which means they're reducing interest rate risk. And they're looking a year out. They're enhancing credit, which means they're underweighting high yield. And they're already underweight governments. And they're eliminating carry. Now, carry is the way a bond guy says he's buying on margin. In the carry trade, what you do is you go to a country with a deteriorating currency and you borrow money there and you buy bonds with it and then you repay the loan with your stronger currency. And so a lot of people have been borrowing money in Japan as the yen gets weaker. And many bond funds now, I was looking the other day at the top 10 performing bond funds, and they're all making huge bets. They're leveraged 150%. And that will hurt.
Yeah.
When the music stops, that's going to hurt. So
I don't get to do that with mine.
our guy is not leveraged, so he's already there. But other than that, the next thing that might happen is that we might decrease the commitment to bonds a little more, okay. But we won't do that just yet.
Any questions for Rick? I'd kind of like to hear, Rick, your take and Mike, your take on kind of what's happening in the local market in terms of real estate and auto, since those are the two biggest economic factors.
In the real estate end, we're seeing, you know, you're getting some of the investors back in on second mm-hmm. homes and things, but there again, gross dollar prices are down, of course, than what they have been, of course, since 05 to 08, but the fact being we're still seeing also too some quite a few first-time home buyers, and actually, believe it or not, the condo market has even picked up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we got three sales going right now, which, you know, and they vary from low to high, and, but we're still seeing, contrary to, in a sense, in my opinion, to the Portland market, where we here too are still advising sellers, you know, if you're not going to be realistic on a correct pricing, don't put your house up. I think that's still happening in Portland, thus the mm-hmm. supply is not there. Mm-hmm. We see some of that here as well. So okay. The affordability factor here is still, Newport's a blue collar town, and we're seeing the 250 and under price range fine, but also you look at Salishan and the higher price properties picking up as well. So it seems to be getting better. Our first quarter was better than it was, I mean, just blew me off. Is that ours? So to speak. So, I mean, we're a small office, and we competed with three of the larger offices in Newport. So that was good to see. So I think it looks promising.
Yeah. Well, so it sounds like, from what we've heard going on in the larger picture, that really this idea of holding on to a house, somebody's, you know, the pricing right part, and thinking that you're going to somehow make more money on it within the next 2 or 3 years, really doesn't exist. I mean, it could, but it's probably riskier than, say, that person. I mean, most people, a lot of people that are pricing those homes right, particularly if they're holding a couple of them, like I am, you know, the money is really going out faster than it's coming in terms of you have to still pay taxes on it and minimum utilities and all that kind of stuff. And unless you really were looking at some kind of much stronger increase down the road, it's kind of hard to project
between the problem we see
dreaming about that or simply
leveraging themselves to where they're underwater. I mean,
right.
When they refi 2-3 times, 4 times.
Yeah, so it basically makes a lot more sense to price that home right, get somebody in it, and just, get out from the expenses.
That's why some people, too, are still holding because they've leveraged themselves so bad that they can.
They can,
So, there again, that surplus is not going on the market because, of course, they can't get themselves out from underwater.
Well, so then the other thing I wondered from what we heard today is we have a number of big retirees coming up. So the question becomes, it looks like we're going to weather through that just fine given the way we've positioned ourselves. And it sounds like that those retirees themselves are going to be in. I mean, I don't know as much the details about what we promise our retirees because I'm new, but it's not like we're facing some kind of disastrous situation where we're not going to be able to honor basically, the kind of retirement they were expecting.
I'm counting on it, Mark.
So, I guess I would put on the table that I'm actually a double dipper in that I work for the county now, but I spent 30 years with the state of Oregon, so you can bet I was tracking the positions on tier one employees because that would make a huge difference on whether I can retire in a year or two.
Yeah. I think if you're looking for home prices to appreciate like they did in 05 and 06, that's not going to happen in our lifetime.
Right.
If you go back and look at home prices over the last 50 or 60 years, they appreciate at GDP plus 1%. And so is it worth waiting 3 years for that?
Yeah. So you're looking at maybe 3% or something.
Mm-hmm. And you still have to get through. If you're selling this market, you're purchasing this market. If you're moving and retiring out of the area, you have to look at both factors. And that's a hard nut to get across.
Yeah.
Mike, what have you seen on the auto side?
Well, the car business has really been good for the last year and a half. But it's well-rounded. It's not just people are buying more cars. It's they're spending money to take care of their cars now, too, which didn't happen between 08 and...
Right, just run into the ground, go buy
new exactly,
one.
Exactly. So still a shortage of used cars. I don't see that changing for 4 or 5 years.
I get these cards from people wanting to buy, dealerships wanting to buy my Tacoma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get
them
on the
Tacoma. We get them on the
It's like CRV, right?
Yeah.
Well, when we were short of used cars in the past, you just go to an auction or shop auctions or online auctions or, call people that are listing their cars on Craigslist, but those avenues really have dried up because the only used cars you find at auction now are they're the dregs.
Yeah.
There ain't much life left in them, or they're branded titles or something like that. So our strategy is you get more aggressive selling new cars because we have the luxury then of taking in trades.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
you were speaking of well-rounded too. It seems like part of that well-rounded picture is people buying it. I mean, my perception is that there's more new cars now out there at lower prices, less luxury model, more cars being brought onto the showroom floor that are sort of more basic transportation, and people are snapping those up. It reminds me of living through the the gas crisis years back in the 70s and seeing an awful lot of people in lesser expensive, perfectly fine cars, smaller cars.
Well, almost all the manufacturers, we talked about this at the last meeting, they ramped up production 20-30%. So they're cranking out new cars as fast as they can.
Yeah.
And at some point, when it hits resistance, then you see the great deals and it costs them nothing nowadays to buy down the interest rate to 0.9%.
Right.
10 years ago when they did that, it did cost them $1,500-$2,000 to the lender up front to be able to do that, but now it's free. So, that's the entry point, and then when they need to move cars, then they combine it with customer cash or dealer cash or whatever it takes to move the needle. So,
yeah. Good. Interesting. Any other questions on that stuff? Okay, let's go to our cash position and what we've got coming up.
Well, we have three people planning to retire in the near future. One, a possible lump sum of about $330,000. He can take retirement anytime, and he is deciding rather to take the lump sum or the annuity. He has the paperwork, but he just hasn't processed it. He's just not sure what he's going to do yet. A possible lump sum of $250,000. He will take his retirement on July of 2013, and he'll probably plan to take his defined contribution plan, $136,000 lump sum, and the balance on the annuity. And then the last one is a possible lump sum of $200,000. His retirement will be around December 2013. And we don't know yet whether he wants to take a lump sum or the annuity.
But employees have the choice of doing both.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They have the choice of all three. Yeah. They can take a lump sum on everything, annuity on everything, or lump sum on the defined contribution plan and annuity on the defined benefit plan. So,
well, given that, I wouldn't recommend that you put that 260 into the market until you know what's going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
And the first one they mentioned, the $335,000.
Mm-hmm.
He's had the paperwork since November.
Yeah.
So I mean, he could walk in any day and say,
"That's it."
Say, "I've decided, you know, take a lump sum." Or I've decided.
What are the time? I mean, when a person, you said that this person is eligible to retire right now. From that point, from the point that they can retire, how much time do they have, according to the plan, to make a decision?
Well, you can retire at age 62. That's her. Of course, there's a few things in there of early retirement, if you're like Rebecca, that's been here forever.
I could retire today.
Yeah.
And she's younger than 62. But at age 62 is when the average employee can go out. It's up to the employee, like the three employees that we're talking about are all past employees that are not with the city. Two of them, one is turning 62 in December, that's why he contacted and says, can we start getting the ball rolling? One is turning 65 in July, and he's starting his Social Security, Medicare, and so that's why he's wanting the retirement, even though he could have took it 3 years earlier. But he had reasons why he didn't want to take it 3 years earlier himself. And the third is over 62, and he's asked for the information. We gave him the information, and it's just sitting.
I'm just trying to wrap my brain around how much we need to have at all times in cash. And so, for instance, that person, if they continue to work for the city, theoretically, they don't have to make a decision.
No, we have.
No.
The thing about our pension plan is, after a point, it stops increasing. I mean, we can continue to work,
right?
But it's no longer going into the formula.
At age 62, I think.
Yeah, at 62 is when that is.
But your
so that amount stays the same.
If you get raises, that part will.
Yeah.
But it's not the years of service won't increase.
Right. But the defined contribution, which is like a 401k, that continues to grow.
Well, you know, what I find that kind of an interesting, I guess I consider it part of the overall economy in terms of debt load out there, losses on equity and homes, the whole works. But it just seems like, from a personal standpoint, that this is a poor time to be thinking about lump sum payouts. I mean, what are you going to do with all that money? Pay off your debt and then not be able to invest some of it?
Well, you know, we have
arranged to give them their check at the dealership.
And realize, open a restaurant.
I realize it's all a personal decision.
It is a personal.
You know, I come
decision.
From a background where I had a lot of, you know, really luxurious PERS employees 10, 20 years ago, being able to retire, collect their lump sum, and go reinvest it and make even more money. I don't think that's in the cards.
Well,
in this,
and I'll be honest with you,
time period,
we have past employees that has left us, chose to take the lump sum and blew through the lump sum, mm-hmm. and I see them working at other places because they don't have the money.
Yeah. And now, understanding that, it's also possible that they got themselves into a situation where they absolutely have to use some of that money for debt and everything else.
And then we also have an employee that retired a few years ago, took annuity less than a year, or just about a year after he retired, he passed away.
Oh, there you go. That's
so,
too,
you know? So, you know, and when
I suppose if you're in that position,
when
some
of the employees look at that, and all of a sudden they're saying, "Yeah, I want the lump sum."
Yeah,
because
I understand
happen.
That one.
Well, and if a financial advisor gets a hold of them, their advice is going to be, "Hey, you don't ever want to keep your retirement where you don't work."
Right.
Right.
Get it out.
Yeah. Even in today's situation.
Yeah.
I think the tail end on Mike's comment, though, if you got two that are 62, one 65, well, 62 decide we're going to wait till Medicare, even though it quits building on. But I think maybe I'm wrong, but the tail end on Mike's stuff is, what if they do that, and what is the lump sum, if all three took lump sums together with, you've got three other employees in the next 3 years go in, what are we faced with there?
Yeah, I was looking at
right now, if all three took lump sums, what was the total figure?
Nine something.
Eight hundred.
880
or something.
780. Yeah, if they all took the lump sum.
And of course, contributions are going in each quarter too. So which I owing you guys another contribution.
Yeah, right.
So.
Well, that's a
sounds like are these are former employees.
Yes, these three are former employees.
Has there been any discussion, or are you aware of any current employees? Because we do have an aging workforce.
We do have an aging, employees that I've talked to, present employees that's come to ask me a few questions about retirement. The big issue is health insurance. Mm-hmm. And they keep saying, well, I'm going to have to work till I'm 65, till I'm on Medicare. Or until I have some way of getting health insurance, and with the Obamacare, for a better word, that may make some changes out there where people, if they feel like they can get health care at a reasonable cost, may be able to go out early. But right now, I had one person that was talking about December this year when I talked to him couple of months ago, he says, oh, we got started looking at insurance. We says, no, I'm here till I'm 65. So
I guess my recommendation is what it's sounding like is that we leave what is there. We go ahead and put the new contribution into that until we get a better feel for what's going to happen here.
I think we could, if it's okay, we'll move it to the benchmark account and get a little extra yield off of it. Won't be a lot, but it'll be better than having it in a money market.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
So
recommend
putting. Are you talking about the contribution that would be coming in?
The 260 that's in there now.
It's in the money market. Put it in the benchmark account.
Or it's in 200. There's 200 in there right now. So we have, how much are we paying that each month?
I don't know what
it's
the
about,
amount is on
it's
the
about 40,000 a month, 30,000.
I think so.
Those are off annuities?
Yes.
Yeah. So why don't we move that 100 plus your next contribution to the benchmark account?
And from the cash account?
Yeah, we can pick up a little extra.
We should have back in the next month also the one that's retiring in July, whether he's going to lump sum or annuity or mm-hmm. a combination of both. But
well, we can liquidate out of that benchmark account anytime we want to.
So what is it to liquidate from the benchmark account? Is there any? Okay. So it's still.
Just let us know you need it.
Yeah. It can still be liquidated from that. So I guess that's what I would move, is to move 100 plus the new contribution into the benchmark fund for now, but still leave it within the benchmark fund until we get better clarification.
Does that need to be a motion?
Yes, a motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So let's go that route. It sounds like there's enough potentially coming down the road that we need it in within the benchmark system of funds.
Well, and we're going to be looking at more and more larger groups every year. I know in the library alone, five of us come of age the same year.
Public Works is very similar as well. They have a lot of folks that are
yes.
about, you know, probably not for 6 years or so, but within that realm.
They're all my age.
Them. They're all gonna,
so I have a,
all my, our age.
a naive or stupid question, given all that doom or gloom, that if everybody decided to take lump sums based on the advice from their financial manager, are there retirement programs around the country or whatever that are in similar situations where for brand new employees, lump sum isn't an option?
Well, all right, we changed.
Or is it just like a given that this is America and you mm-hmm. have to allow that?
About a year ago, we changed our retirement plan for all new employees that no longer do they have the defined benefit and the defined contribution. They only have a defined contribution of which the city puts in 6%. If they choose to put into to a 457B plan, mm-hmm. another 3%, is it 3%? Then the city will match up to 9%.
Okay.
So we've kind of already made changes.
And what were we doing just prior to that?
We had have a defined benefit plan, which is based on number of years of service times your highest 3 years
okay.
of salary plus
mm-hmm. plus classic pension.
1.2, and then we also had the defined contribution plan, which the city was putting 6%, and at the time they retire, they come together.
So we've already somewhat reacted to this. Mm-hmm. May have right. money going out faster than it's coming in.
On the forward, well, yeah. And what we're talking about on the benchmark funds is we're trying to anticipate those cash needs over the next 5 years. We still can take money out of the markets. It's just we don't want to time the market with that, and that's mm-hmm. why we're a little more aggressive in the money market fund or in the market funds with the 80% is because we've got 5 years back there. But we can still reach in at any time and liquidate the market positions as needed as well. We're just trying to stay ahead of that.
Right.
And historically, we haven't seen everybody. Even though if they have an advisor, they might hear that. But historically, we have not seen everybody taking lump sums.
Right.
We've had a large percentage stay in the annuity mm-hmm. Based on their feeling that it's being managed well, I guess, and that's mm-hmm. what they'd rather do. So if that shift changes, then we may have to build that five-year bucket up larger. But that's what we're trying to do every quarter is get a feel for are those five-year buckets staying up with it. So,
matter of fact, our last employee that went out that took annuity took the information to a financial planner, and the financial planner says, "I can't give you what the annuity would be."
Right,
right.
Or at least not guarantee it for the
yeah,
next
guarantee
you
know, it.
30 mm-hmm. years.
Because interest rates are at zero.
Yeah.
Right.
Although we've had other employees that go to someone else who claims that he can do a much better job. So.
Yeah. Linda, you must get something from the actuary through Standard that's laying out what the demographics enough that you can see what could possibly be.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to recommend to Mark to familiarize herself with every year at the end of every fiscal year, June 30, mm-hmm. The city has an actuary come up with a percentage of funding.
Okay.
For the whole plan.
Cool.
I can't remember what the number was last year.
What was it, 76%?
76%.
Yeah.
And
we went
down
as low.
Better than some and worse than some.
Yeah,
we went down as low as in the high
school. As long as you're not at the bottom.
You mean percentage funded?
Yeah.
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 You
you know, obviously this committee's ultimate goal is to get to 100%.
Right.
Right.
So that the city doesn't have to take general funds and shore up
right.
The retirement plan.
Right.
Cool.
And this year will help get us back in a little bit better position on mm-hmm. that. But mm-hmm. So, but the next 5 years or so don't sound like it's going to help us much on that. We're going to have to get the tailwinds from this year.
I think so.
Yeah. So, all right. Any other business or questions? As for our next meeting, should we just do that by email? I don't know that we have. Do you have any dates? Okay.
July.
Probably so late July. You got
July, August.
Late July, early August.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's when we'll set it. And we'll do that by
the,
email.
The fourth Thursday mm-hmm. in July, we have a conflict.
Okay. We'll get good dates from you before we do anything.
Unless we have a standing meeting in Lincoln City that goes off at 9 o'clock, mm-hmm. I think.
8:30 or 9 as usually.
So if you wanted to do it on that day, we'd need to be a little later in the day than because it takes about an hour and it takes an hour to get over here. So.
Okay, we'll let you two coordinate those potential dates. Yeah, JJ, the potential dates, and then we'll get it out by email again. So, thank you everybody for coming.
Thank you all. Very interesting to meet you.
Goodbye.